anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
And you're very welcome along to Golf Weekly. It's a Golf Weekly where we are celebrating Paul Dunn, who'll join us in the show after his first win on the European Tour at the British Masters at the weekend. We're also going to speak to Seamus Power, who's held onto his card by a measly 200 and something, $67.72. Fionn Davenport, hello.
Indeed. Yeah, Joe, how are you?
Very well. So Nathan Murphy not here just yet. He will join us later on in the pod, so that will be a very exciting moment for Nathan.
True.
We have President's Cup to talk about as well. There was a moment where Donald Trump dedicated the President's Cup win to the people of Puerto Rico, and not one of them knew about it or gave a flying...
Oh. Monkeys, yeah.
Yeah.
It's true, yeah.
I dedicate this to the great people of Puerto Rico, he said. And everybody behind him nodded and thought, well, that is an appropriate gesture,
absolutely.
Donald. That is the right thing to do.
He captured the tone quite well, I thought. I enjoyed the video of him when he was down... We're recording on Wednesday, so he's down in Puerto Rico yesterday, and he had the kitchen roll. Have you seen this?
Mm.
And he's like lobbing them out, like, hey, catch this one, catch that one. And it's like, I mean, I know he's trying to be invested, he's trying to be connected, but he's just two dimes shy of getting it right.
It's leadership, Fionn, what he
did. Listen, obviously, I am not a leader. He is a leader.
The worst part about the toilet roll, throwing it out to people, is he's clearly, after a while, just starts working on his basketball follow-through jump shot.
Yeah,
he's just throwing it in a very... I mean, it's just like it's a basketball.
Three and a half rotations of backspin, and that'll... Yeah.
And he's such an egomaniac. I know he's thinking to himself, these are pretty good throws.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the whole tone. Anyway, but I thought it was so strange, like, that he dedicated it to the people of Puerto Rico whilst rowing with the mayor of San Juan and telling her that she was the problem and, you know... Anyway, whatever.
We'll come to the President's Cup. Mm. So some tweets into @GolfWeeklyNT. Kirk Russell, like many of you, looking forward to the pod this week. Great to see Dunners 11, @Dunners11, win his first European Tour event. What a way to close out, says Kirk Russell. Yeah, very good. Spark, he sent a picture. He was away in South Africa and played two great courses. Ernie Els designed Ube Links and the De Zalze in Stellenbosch. # friend of the pod.
# take us to South Africa.
Do you know any of them?
No, I know Stellenbosch, but I've never, like... Stellenbosch is in South Africa.
I picked up that much.
It's the wine country outside of Cape Town.
The wine country outside of Cape Town.
Yeah,
okay.
There's all these wineries up there. Like Stellenbosch would be one of the South African wines that would come from this part of South Africa. Really, really beautiful part of the world. I spent time with Ernie Els in Cape Verde. He was designing a golf course there that I don't think ever got built. But that was the one where... He was asked that question. He goes, what do you think about in the first tee? And he goes, I just want to put the club on the ball. That was it. Yeah.
What age was he then?
This was 2004, maybe.
Okay,
so 13 years ago.
Really.
He had just, yeah. He
Tiger
was.
Tiger hadn't crushed him just yet.
No, he was impressive. I mean, really impressive. And later on that evening, because the town we were in was very, very small. And so he was in the bar and he was just having a beer and just chatting away to people. And someone in the conversation said to him, and he goes, so, like, what are you into? And he goes, oh, beers and braai, man. Beers and braai. So, you know, braai, the South African barbecue. That was it. Hmm. And his private plane is parked on the runway of the little Mickey Mouse airport in Seoul. It was amazing. It was quite impressive.
Yeah. We had Thomas Hauser on the show recently, the boxing writer, talking about Jake LaMotta. Who was a terrible person.
Mm.
You know, Raging Bull doesn't shy away from that, for instance, and beat his wife repeatedly even after they had divorced. And Hauser had this line, fame is an aphrodisiac. And so we attribute impressiveness to people who are famous, when really, if a normal person behaved like them, you wouldn't think they were that
absolutely.
Impressive.
That's absolutely true.
Nothing you've told me about Ernie Els there is impressive.
No, it's not. It's because he's just an amazing golfer.
And famous.
So what is impressive is
so
how
if he
normal...
Farted, if he farted, you would have went, oh.
But you know,
there,
it's
a bit
like...
in that fart.
There's a friend of mine who played in a five-a-side, just to pick up with Bono, like 20 years ago. And he was so impressed with... And I was like, is it just because Bono kicked a ball that impresses you?
Yeah.
It's like he's crap at football.
Yeah.
And I remember being irritated by that at the time. Maybe I wanted to be in the five-a-side. I don't know. Who knows?
Maybe, but I wanted to be hanging out with Ernie Els. I mean,
but the point is that what makes Ernie Els impressive, or certainly then, was that how ordinary, and I'm using air quotes, how ordinary he appeared.
How unimpressive he was.
How unimpressive he was, precisely.
So he was very, very unimpressive.
Yes, exactly. He was a very ordinary guy who could hit a ball a mile.
Adrian Bain, a lot of people tweeted about this. This won't mean anything to you. Paw Patrol chat was the highlight of the episode, lads, last week. Glad I'm not the only dad that is outraged by the addition of extra dogs.
This is a Nathan thing, isn't it?
And Dave McIntyre, two fathers of young children. Mm. James O'Keefe, can you set up 10 minutes a week for more Paw Patrol conversation? Best show on TV. We will look into that. It's funny that we will get our notes and watch the golf and give up our free time. Well, not give up. We would watch it anyway. But we prepare for this podcast. And then it's amazing the gibberish that we talk. That's what generates the most traffic.
Authentic radio, Joe.
I saw somebody yesterday come up to me in Starbucks, very nice guy, and said, friend of the pod, fan of the show, whatever, and like the golf pod as well. And I was like, oh yeah. He goes, I especially like the time ye discussed what the plural of attorney general was.
Oh, yes. Because it's not forced. There's so much TV, so much media that's forced. And I think the thing... I'm breaking a fourth wall here. I think one of the things I love most about doing this podcast is, one is you're spending time with friends.
Who?
Before I come in.
Oh, sorry. You see the crew out there, yeah.
Yeah. No, but that you spend time and you're kind of, stuff comes up like whatever it is, attorneys general or Paul
I think
Patrol.
We settled on attorney generi.
Sure.
It is attorneys general.
It is attorneys general.
Yeah, I found that a very interesting tidbit to know, because I would have said attorney generals.
I think most people would say attorney generals.
Kind of. I mean, logically, that would make a lot more sense than attorneys general. But I suppose an attorney is also I did a degree in English, and I don't know. Like, it's a noun, isn't it?
Yes.
So they're both nouns. An attorney and a general are both nouns.
So the first. Well, no. The general in this is a qualifier of the main noun. It's not used as a noun. So it's a general attorney, if you know what I mean.
Sorry, so it's not like a general in the army.
No. So it's like, or maybe actually, now that you say it, he is the boss of all the attorneys.
So that's why I thought he's the general.
There you go. Here we are again.
It's an interesting one.
It is an interesting.
Well, maybe it's not, but I think it is.
I'm not. I'm with you. I think it is interesting.
Dave. Then says you'll definitely have to get Seamus Power on the show after he clinched the final spot and a PGA Tour card 2018. Yeah, I think hopefully he's off the ball this evening. And if he is, we'll tag this onto the podcast for you. Branal Chamblee, you like this. Somebody somebody retweeted us Branal Chamblee tweet to say, I'd say you love this guy even more now. Branal Chamblee in the midst of golf, not saying very much politically. Brandle tweeted the other day, this is after what happened in Las Vegas, obviously. Have you had a drink recently? If so, you were able to because an amendment that existed was reversed. Now, how did that happen? Brandon, not a fan of the Second Amendment.
No, but I mean, I was like, it's not even a joke, but it's like, yeah, whatever. Anyway, without getting into it. But here's the thing. Yeah, absolutely. The Second Amendment. Everybody should be given a musket.
Neil Finnegan. Lads, I could do with a round back home to shake off what I witnessed on Saturday. # friend of the pod. And he was at the President's Cup course outside New York.
We can talk about it. Liberty National, the course voted 2 years ago in a anonymous vote to be the least favourite on the PGA circuit by all the players. Mm.
But great views.
But they were all shiting on about how brilliant it was.
Yeah. Kevin Ward tweeted us, Ryder Cup tickets went on sale Wednesday, lads. Just the €335 for a Saturday-Sunday ticket.
They've obviously started ramping up the Ryder Cup chat. And one of the things that was interesting was that I heard, Mark Rowe maybe said it, I don't want to be unfair to him, but that Golf National de Paris, that the golf club is amazing. And I went, really? I wouldn't have known. Do you know much about it?
No, but I've heard it's amazing.
Okay, so it's worth maybe, like, I must pay closer attention to Golf National de Paris.
We have time.
Yes, we do. We have a year.
Alan Grain said, a lovely picture. He was at Knightsbrook. I've never played Knightsbrook. He was golfing late September, not always cold and wet last Tuesday evening. Amazing. It was like Portugal. Picture looked good. Scott Hayes, remember lads, the Ryder Cup went for 50 years. This is on the President's Cup. Is it in trouble? Discussion. The Ryder Cup went for 50 years before anyone cared. Still better than watching the fall series. Maybe it is, but I mean, I think the Ryder Cup was in trouble until the Europeans were at it. And even Jack Nicklaus was saying, this is no good, us thrashing Great Britain and Ireland. So let's add in continental Europe. Sure. And then quite quickly people cared because it was some way competitive or interesting. I don't know how you dress up the President's Cup anytime soon.
Well, I would get rid of the Ryder Cup and or make the Ryder Cup international team versus the USA, including GB and I, Europe and the rest of them.
Ah, no.
Yeah. That's what I would
do. Was
it? Yeah.
No, I'm not what you're told there.
Do you want a little birdie? Ryder Cup 2022, so Nacional de Paris, obviously, next year, and then the USA 2020. Golf Club de Catalunya.
Is that right?
That's what I'm hearing.
Okay. It's been a while since it was Spain. Is it Valderrama?
No, it'll be Golf Club Catalunya.
But is it Valderrama? That was the last time it was
the
in Spain?
The one and only time it was in Spain.
Jonathan Kennedy, it was like the third, this is the President's Cup, like a third place playoff at the World Cup.
He's not wrong.
It just felt so
he's not wrong.
Unimportant. It's true. Thomas Byrne said, we were looking for solutions. How do we fix this? So you have scrapped the Ryder Cup. Because Europe is an unwieldy enough a concept to get behind. You want to be part of the rest of the world versus the USA. But Thomas Byrne wonders, lads, why not do what they do with the under-10s football? Put a few US players on the other team.
Oh, I know. You go play with him. Jordan, you're rubbish at singles. You go play with the
Did
other
you
guys.
See Jordan Spieth singing in the press conference?
No.
It's hilarious. He was singing the Siwoo Kim song.
Was he?
Yeah. Which kind of goes, ah, Siwoo, shaking that ass.
Oh,
he sang it in the press conference really well.
Oh, but is he a good singer?
He's not bad.
Well, he's from Texas.
I barely committed to it there, but he sang it and everybody lost their marbles laughing.
My solution is not my, I didn't come up with it myself. It's an old Nicklaus one. Remember when Nicklaus was the guy in the President's Cup? And he makes a very valid point. This is like the world has changed. It used to be Ryder Cup, it used to be against GB and I, and then they threw in the Europeans. But now, like, do you not want to see Hideki Matsuyama tee it up alongside Rory, or, you know, I think that's
seen it.
But my point is that whether we like it or not, the PGA Tour is the tour. Mm-hmm. Everything else is a secondary tour. And so the demographics and the geographics of golf have changed so much that you have one powerhouse in the USA and then you have everybody else. Mm. And so I think that would be an interesting competition.
I mean, it would be interesting. I would keep the Ryder Cup, and if we have to then do some kind of world event instead of the President's Cup. Like, the Ryder Cup is finally balanced at the moment, I feel. It's in a really good place.
Yeah,
it's hard to know who's going to win at any given time.
I appreciate that. Like, and it is finally found its back and forth.
Yeah, you know? And there is also a history and tradition that you give away. You can't hark back to all the other years over the last 40 years in the way that you can currently. You'd be starting from scratch. And again, that loves tradition. It just feels like you'd be giving up so much to fix the President's Cup.
Does it matter?
And it mightn't even fix it. What if the world just hockeyed the USA then? The world would be too strong.
Would they?
I'd say so. Like, you're talking Europe's five or six best players and then
three or
Jason
four
Day and Hideki Matsuyama and the boys. It would be an outrageously strong
couple
team.
Couple of South Africans.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the international team would be too strong. Though I didn't think the international team looked so bad that it was going to be hockey to that extent.
No.
Anyway, one last one is Brian Moran, who's on the beach in Portugal. Some people are still eking out the last of the summer. No better way to spend a Friday in Portugal than with @GolfWeekly and Teapod. No earphones in, lads, so everyone beside me has to listen to # tough shit. Brian Moran, a lovely young man.
That's pretty funny.
Enjoying his holidays. Okay, we'll talk President's Cup next. Not that we're underestimating Paul Dunne being the biggest story, but we'll just start with President's Cup and we'll get on to Paul Dunne. Interviewed him yesterday, so we'll bring his thoughts. He was pretty happy, needless to say. So the President's Cup was a complete annihilation from start to finish. They were on 14.5 points on the Saturday night, with 15.5 points being the target. So from my point of view, I kept a semi-close eye on it in the few days building up to Sunday in the hope that we might have some sort of competition come Sunday. And then when I saw Saturday night, 14.5 points to 2 or 3 points, whatever it was, it's like, so we're not even going to get half a Sunday afternoon out of it. As it turned out, the international team had a decent Sunday and made the score look less ridiculous because, it could have looked really...
19-11 in the end.
It could have looked really awful. So what I saw of it, frankly, was not too much. I was more inclined to stay if Paul McGinley and Sarah Sturck and, our friend, O2 PGA.
O2?
Rich Beam.
Oh, sorry. I was going O2, the telephone company.
No. Rich Beam. Oh, so yeah. if they were all chatting, I found I stayed. And then when it went back to the golf...
Yeah,
I kind of.
I mean, as much as, and I know I mentioned it already, but I mean, if it is the PGA, the players don't like the course. It looks good, and in the sun, like late September, New York, well, New Jersey, like short sleeves, look nice. You know, it had nice, really brilliant white bunkers. I think I watched it because I have a pathological addiction to golf. And I'm a sick man, but also because I thought, you know what, there's nothing to play for, so it's kind of watching guys just, maybe they'll try for trick shots and go for shot. And so I thought it might be interesting. Mm. I wanted to see Jordan Spieth kind of break that losing streak, that 0-5 that he's on. Didn't happen. And as you said, the internationals, they played okay, but like, so what? Mm. I mean, they're good players.
And was it enjoyable to watch? Were the matches even within themselves? Yeah, they're okay.
Who
were the best matches?
Mickelson. I liked watching Mickelson play and the cheers that he get every time he'd do anything. But I'd watch Jordan Spieth, you know, kick sand off his shoes, you know. So, Dustin Johnson, I'll say this, impressive. What is he? Four wins, 4 points and a draw and a half match. Amazing. Like, he's just dominant. He played well.
And then Donald Trump came and presented the trophy.
Donald Trump was in the box on 17 or 18, so, and he kept waving to people, so the camera kept panning to him, and so there was, all of a sudden, there was the big Trump distraction. I think he's the first sitting US president to present the trophy.
Yeah, that the announcer said that, and Trump looked around to nod as if to say, check me out.
I think I deserve an A+ for this.
Yeah. I saw he got hold of Tiger at one point, had a nice chat with Tiger.
But didn't Tiger spend the entire time trying to avoid him?
Well, I mean, we can't say that for sure. Mm. It may have appeared that way.
Well, the one person Tiger didn't avoid was Phil Mickelson, his BFF, apparently.
There was the hug.
The hug, and then afterwards saying they've been friends, good friends for years.
All this time. Yeah.
Good friend. It doesn't surprise me. I don't think they were mortal enemies, but like, it's this need to say, oh, no, we've been really good friends for years.
Yeah.
Again.
A few years, maybe. And not really good
friends. Just like they say, hey, how's it going? Pretty good.
Yeah.
Collegial.
No, I saw the hug and it seemed genuine enough. And they've definitely gone from being massive rivals, largely on Tiger's part, to now not needing to hate each other. So that was kind of nice, I suppose. And then, I don't know, Nick Price said, look, what can you do? They're an awesome American team. Steve Stricker, I mean, it's hard to even assess his captaincy. He did well, I suppose. Paul McGinley made the point at one stage. It's not like America here have had to think about Plan B or had to crisis manage. In some respects,
in fairness, Paul knows about managing a team.
It's not been of much use to them in that respect. I suppose what it has been for Team USA is a bonding experience, and it keeps up the momentum from last year. Like, for them, it must be a lovely thing to every year to come together and do this. Whereas the Europeans don't quite have the momentum from, you know, 2 years is quite a long time.
You mean the internationals?
No, I'm talking about the Europeans.
For the Ryder Cup.
Not really worried about future President's Cups.
But I think there's a good point. So there's a kind of a PR, there's a blanket of PR over all of this. So obviously it was a foregone conclusion. And it's funny because even though, I lead this chorus, you know, it doesn't matter. Who cares what your President's Cup record is? Who cares what your Ryder Cup record is? Like, Jordan Spieth wants to win every match he plays. So it's kind of strange that he can't win a singles. And him and Patrick Reed, they put up, I think they were like 3.5 or whatever. But he can't win a singles. But it's not like he doesn't want to win the matches. Like Justin Thomas, when Justin Thomas won his, you could see he was really happy to win. Mm-hmm. But the PR thing was not so much about the winning, but about, look at us, we're the new generation of golf, we're pals, we're into japes and gags, and we're cool, and I thought that was important for the limited audience that would have watched the President's Cup, but that key audience of golf fans. I think they were all, or it seemed to me, they were all very conscious about portraying blowing off the dust and cobwebs of old golf into new golf. And new golf is cool and hip and young and friends.
And I think they're genuine. I think they're pretty funny, cool guys, really. One, actually, you mentioned Reed and Speed. One thing I did see at one point was Reed had a shot in out of the rough from 100 yards, maybe. It was kind of a crosswind, but he was coming in at an angle, and it was Spieth who went over to him and was like saying, "You very clearly on microphone, it's 110, hit it 110. With that wind, even though it's 100, it's 110, because that angle, that wind's going to get you, you want to go there." And Reed didn't kind of say much, but took the advice on board, did that, absolutely stitched it, like the perfect part of the green, fed down. Reed's probably thinking, if I had that guy's brain, I would be 10 times better than I am. Winner, yeah, you know, it was like a little insight into just how, it wasn't a big deal. I mean, it was, there's a wind and I'm saying how much extra yardage you want to take on account of it. But it was just a glimpse into Spieth's intelligence, and that if it was so basic, he wouldn't have said it to Reed, because Reed was kind of looking, you sure, you think? Yeah. And Spieth was so forceful about it. He was like, 100%, do it, 100%, and walked off. Reed stitches it. And I'd say Reed, as he was walking up, did think, the kid's got smarts. There's not really too much to say about the President's Cup. It came and went pretty quickly. It was unremarkable. But Paul Dunne, on the other hand, was pretty amazing on Sunday. So we'll hear from Paul Dunne in just a few moments' time. A 61 on the Sunday.
Oh,
61 on the Sunday.
On the 11th, did you see him hit the
sprinkler?
The sprinkler in 11.
Yeah.
I mean, it was fated. The gods declared, no matter what, it's his today.
Yeah.
But 61, the chip on 18, the putt on 17, it was phenomenal. And I was speaking to our friend Peter Laurie about it, and it was interesting because we were asking, so he's played with Paul Dunne quite a lot. And he goes, what's your name? And he goes, very mature player, like really mature, way beyond his years. So an ability to control his emotions, an ability to work well under pressure. Mm. And it's like I was saying, and then was it last year at the Open? And he was like, whatever it was, 3 years ago.
Mm.
And you go, oh my God, so much time has gone by. And that in the interim, like this is a player who's really, like he'll win more. But for his maiden win, to have Rory McIlroy right there, and that chip in 18 with Rory McIlroy standing off going, well, there's a playoff here.
Mm.
And then that was amazing. And it was impressive. And obviously he's one of ours, so we're thrilled. The only thing, and I know we're going to hear from him, but like the only comment I had was watching in the after, like it must have exhausted him, because when Tim Barter interviewed him on Sky, well, Tim Barter was doing what Tim Barter has to do. So obviously the producers decide, right, this Sky Kart thing, you know, the masterclass stuff that they all do, this has been a huge, huge success for Sky. And rightly so, we all love it. But timing, my friend. Everything is about timing. You don't get the guy who has just won, who has just shot a 61 and is physically, mentally and emotionally exhausted to recreate the shot. He asked him to do it. And because Paul Dunne is a first-time winner and because he's polite, he did it. But you could tell he would rather be anywhere else. He said it himself. He goes, what would you like? He goes, I'd love just a pint. I'd love to just relax. Yeah. I'm exhausted.
Because he had to drive up to St Andrews that evening with Larry as well. So, I mean, he was away from that pint.
And then to add insult to injury, so he chipped again. And then it was like, recreate the putt on 17. And it was just like, okay. And it didn't happen. He couldn't do it. And Tim Barter was like with this weak kind of, I was like, well, you've got $500,000 in your back pocket, so it's okay. And it was just like, oh God.
Hmm.
It was timing, lads. Hopefully Sky will go, yeah, let's not get the guy just straight off to come in and be the performer.
It's hard to know. You can be a bit harsh. I mean, he could have come in ebullient and joyous and wanted to recreate it all and talk about it all, energised by the whole thing. Like, I think, I'll never criticise media for trying.
No, sorry.
They're making an effort. I think it's good they gave it a go. He's a bit tired. Okay, fair enough. Didn't quite work.
Well, my own thought. I agree. And I think the masterclass, I think the Sky Kart thing is brilliant. I think it's a really good. It's very interesting as a viewer to get a sense from players about specifics relating to their round. I'm certainly there's no critique of Tim Barter, who has someone in his ear saying to him, is like, just get him to do this. I just think that like it's a, sometimes there's over-egging the custard. It's just like sometimes less is more. And I thought in this instance, anyway, but that was just a little small thing.
It's a minor thing, yeah. Mm. As you'll hear in this interview, I mean, it's interesting. Laurie talks about his maturity because, and I remark on it to Dunne, in the interview last night, the level of his strategic thinking under the pressure was amazing, because I asked him about on 17, were you in any way tempted to take out the old hybrid or 3 or 4 iron and lay up and go that way? And the way he'll talk through the 17th hole, listen out for that. I mean, he was thinking very, very clearly, and he was also thinking about his position in the field and where he stood, and if he did X, what the others would have to do and where it would leave him. And I mean, he is a really smart guy. He's not the Dustin Johnson type who'll just say, I don't really care what's going on around me, I'm just going to take each hole as it comes and try and hit the ball as far as I can. He's thinking very strategically, probably is more in that category as well. And the other interesting thing is he says he's driving the ball a lot better. His bad drives aren't as wild. Mm. So that just changes life massively. So he's gone from last year hanging on for dear life for his card, hanging on, and now
3 years,
well over a million quid made. I ask him what it's like to see a million quid after your name as well. You know what I mean?
I'm delighted.
Yeah. You're a young man and you're just a million quid.
I know.
A bit surreal.
Yeah.
You're normal enough family, normal enough fella. Million quid. Madness. So Paul Dunne interview is coming up. You're heading out of here.
Yeah, I'm going to the Czech Republic. I'm heading out. I'm going to put on my intrepid discoverer hat and go and play golf for 3 days in outside Prague. I'm going to 3 different resorts and then report back on.
Nice.
Czech Republic are trying to promote their golf product.
What country isn't?
True. And I was asking because Peter Lawrie won the Czech Masters.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was asking him about it, and he was like, oh, courses are amazing.
Right.
So looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, you enjoy that.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, Paul Dunne interview, and here was the moment where Dunne chipped in on 18.
What a shot. What a shot. Go in. Go in. Oh, my word. What a way to finish. 61 on the final day, chipping in to win your first European tournament. With the lowest final round of the year, equaling Matsuyama's 61. That is just brilliant.
Paul Dunne, you're very welcome. That was just showing off, that last bit.
Yeah, I know. All I was thinking is just don't chip at the 20 feet to somewhere where I'd have to think about not three-putting. So,
yeah,
it was a nice little bonus for it to go in. Just kind of topped off a pretty amazing week.
I presume you're some way nervous over that chip. I mean, it's a routine enough chip on a Thursday when no one's watching. But in that moment, thoughts of doom must be there, even though you try and keep them at bay. Or how were you feeling?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, once I birdied 17, I knew I had a bogey to win. So all I was thinking is just to try get a high flight where it's coming down softly, and then it wouldn't release to the back of the green. So the thing I was most focused on was the strike. But my chipping had been really good all week. So I felt comfortable with the shot, but just kind of nervous to get over the line without trying to stumble over the line, really.
Yeah. You're suddenly 88th in the world as opposed to 192nd last week. It's amazing what a win can do for somebody in golf. To be in the top 100, I have no doubt, was a big aim of yours.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was a good week to do it because there was lots of world ranking points available with a couple players in the top 10 in the world and lots of top 50 players. So the world ranking points were there last week. So yeah, that's a big bonus for me to jump into the top 100. And you know, I'm playing 6 of the next 7 weeks and game feels great. So it'd be nice to be up there again a couple of times before the end of the year.
You've spoken about going out to win this tournament as opposed to hopefully somebody handing it to you. Do you say that to yourself on Saturday night? Is it when you wake up Sunday morning? When does that go off? Or is it months ago, maybe after the Hassan Trophy where you went very close before, that you say the next time I'm in position, I'm just going aggressively for it? When do you resolve to actually really go for it on Sunday?
I think it's something that just happens over time. You know, the more I got in positions like that, even if it wasn't to win, but in a position where I needed to make up ground on Sunday to get money last year to keep my card, I learned a lot from all of them. And then, it just helps you to learn about yourself, really, what makes yourself tick, and what mindset you need to be in to play your best when you know that it matters the most. So I think it's something definitely that built up over time, and I got more and more confidence in myself that when I found myself in that position again, that I'd be ready to win. But I think it was more in the morning. The morning I kind of told myself, I just need to get off to a quick start, get my nose in front, and then once I'm in front, just keep putting the foot down and not let anybody else come close enough to catch me. So
yeah.
I was in a good mindset, but it was something that probably was a learning curve ever since I turned pro, really, you know, a couple of years ago.
Yeah. The shot where I just said, oh, wow, this guy has it, is your drive on 17. It's that, for people who didn't see it, that short par four, it's a risk reward. People had been going at the greens, but, you know, there's bunkers up there. There's a bit of trouble to the left. And you stood up and just absolutely hit, you know, striped it straight down the middle. Perfect drive. And that set up the birdie chance. And as you said, once you got to 18 with the two-shot cushion, you knew you were in good shape. How are you feeling on that 17 tee? Is there any part of you thinking, oh, you know, I might just get the old hybrid out here?
No, well, it was either a 4-iron or a driver. But it was downwind off the right with a back right flag. But the green was kind of perched up and elevated. And it was quite a difficult wedge shot.
Right.
You had to be quite precise because it was a strong wind with us. So, and the wedge shot would have been off a slight downslope with the ball below your feet with a kind of a false front running back into a bunker. And then about 6 or 7 paces behind the flag, it kind of fed off the back of the green as well. So I thought that the wedge shot would have had to be so precise. Because downwind, it's easy for the wedge shot to take one big skip before it spins. And by the time it skips,
yeah,
it could already be over the back of the green. So I thought I needed to make 3. If I made 3, it was over in my head.
Mm.
And it would have taken a lot of stress out of the 18th. So I thought the best way to make 3 was to hit driver up the left-hand side, open up the green for a basic chip up the green. So, it was one of those things. I hit a great drive, but I knew I could kill the hole with one good swing. And, yeah, it just meant I could come down the 18th with less stress than I would have had otherwise.
Yeah. How does winning feel like in comparison to what you thought it might be like? I saw you use the word relief.
Yeah, I think the relief was more that, you know, with a few holes to go, I knew, like Shane said it to me best, you know, Shane Lowry was going to give me a lift up to St Andrews after. He said to his caddy when he saw me 3 ahead with like 5 to play, that he said, this is either going to be the best car journey ever or it's going to be like a morgue going up. So I think once I knew I was in that position, it was more of a relief to not give anyone the hope by making a bogey, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because all of a sudden you make a bogey, someone makes a birdie, 2 shots, then it gives them a lift. And that's kind of what happened in Morocco. I got finished birdie eagle to catch me there. So
yeah,
I was just kind of determined not to let that happen again. So that was more the relief. But, you know, I was in a good mindset to just kind of keep pressing on and never say enough is enough, really.
How was the car journey up to St Andrews that evening then?
Yeah, it was pretty nice. Mm. It was, you know, it was about 3 hours, and then as soon as we got there, we went straight to the pub and had a little bit of a celebration. And I woke up in not the best, you know, I felt better than I did on Monday morning, but still, I wouldn't trade it for anything else.
Yeah, I read somewhere that Harrington joined you as well, so it was like you, Harrington, Larry. Like, what a lovely thing that is. We hear about the sense of fraternity and on the tour, but geez, like a guy like Harrington going out of his way to come out and join you guys as well, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it was brilliant. You know, Padraig was there, Shane, Darren, my caddy, then Ronan Flood, caddies for Padraig, loads of other Irish caddies on tour, so a few of them, then John Dempster joined as well, who caddied for Robert Carlson, who I played with. The only person that might have missed out was Dermot, Shane's caddy. He had to go back home for his wife's 40th, so. But everyone else that was Irish came out, you know, it was, yeah, no, I'm really lucky, you know, that the guys would support me like that, especially because, you know, I obviously would have loved to be at home with my family celebrating, but I'll do that next week.
Yeah, exactly. There's lots to look forward to. So I'm seeing you play plenty this year and watching your results, the win just gone, a week before that at the KLM Open, it's a top 20 finish, Made in Denmark, top 20 finish, Paul Lawrie match play, you're tied for 9th, the Trophy Asan, second place, Tshwane Open, tied for 6th. Bottom line, as opposed to last year where you were looking over your shoulder and making sure you kept your card, this year you were in really safe territory all the way through and playing some good stuff. So, mentality aside, is your game much better than last year, or what's the big difference for you?
Yeah, well, my game is definitely better. I'm driving the ball much better. My statistically, maybe the numbers haven't improved dramatically, but in terms of my misses have come down. So if I'm missing a fairway now, the ball's in play.
Okay.
When last year there it was a little bit more destructive, so it cost me more shots hitting. My bad shots were costing me more bogeys and doubles than they are this year. So I've improved then. My putting's improved as well. I think I'm quite high up the tour and the putts statistically. But I think mentally has been a big thing as well. You know, just trying to, because I had a lot of Sundays where I fell back last year, and I've had a lot of Sundays this year where I've jumped up. So
okay,
I think it was learning how to deal with that element of getting myself in the right place to play well on the Sundays when the finish line was coming up. So
yeah,
I think that's definitely been the biggest thing. But then, like you said, I had my card in the bag this year. So when I was going out to the final round, I didn't have to worry about, you know, making sure I had a high finish, not getting too aggressive because I needed the money to keep my card. I was just going out trying to win.
Yeah.
You know, that was a nice freedom to have.
You won't remember this clearly because you had other things on your mind at the time, but I interviewed you very briefly in the car park at St. Andrews on the Sunday night before the Monday. And I remember you were talking, you had family over, and I'm working off memory here. I think your brother, is he a chef or was he done cooking duty that week? Could that be possible?
My brother's a performance nutritionist. So okay. He works for athletes, yeah. So
right. So
he does a bit of cooking, but he's not a chef.
I've promoted
him. Yeah, he probably was
there
on cooking duties that week, but my mum's normally the one on cooking duties.
Okay, so that week, I mean, very special, and it must be lovely around the apartment around St. Andrews. So that's the exception. The rhythm of European tour life and cooking for yourself or getting somebody else to cook for you. So, like, what's your entourage now on a standard European tour event somewhere, you know, further than the UK? Like, are you on your own? Is it you and the caddy? Do you tend to room with another player or, like, share an apartment? What works best for you? Are you still figuring that out?
I like to have my own room.
Mm.
So I'll share an apartment sometimes with other players. But I like to have my own bedroom, have my own space to get to where I can call home or, you know, watch some TV and kind of switch off. So if it's a hotel room, I prefer not to share unless it's with my girlfriend. So, you know, my girlfriend Sophie's been out with me to 10 events this year.
Okay.
Then my mum and dad have probably been out to 3 or 4. My sister came to a couple. My brother's been to a few. My brother's here this week in Scotland, and my mum and dad are coming over for the weekend. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of had a good mix, you know, and then I have my coach. I have two coaches, one in America and one in Ireland. So Eric has came to the US Open with me, and then Carl Holmes, the pro in Greystones, has been out to 3 events this year and maybe 4 last year. So, you know, I think more than half the weeks I'll have somebody out with me.
Okay.
And then the other week, spend by yourself. If all the weeks aren't by yourself, then you don't mind it. You know,
yeah,
a little bit of a switch off week and get stuck into some Netflix.
Yeah. Has anyone done an Excel sheet on which family member or girlfriend brings you the highest finishes?
No, I don't think that's something I'm gonna share. That information I probably wouldn't share with any of them, even if I knew it.
That's fair enough. So listen, we'll let you go because I appreciate you've got such a busy week and it sounds like you're in a great place. Can I ask you a terribly kind of grubby question? But I must admit it's one I'm interested in. So you're a young guy and I appreciate golf is your priority and you would play golf for free. But like invariably with golf, you know what people are earning. Like that's how the order of merit, that's what it's based on. Is it a slightly surreal thing to be a fairly normal fella growing up in Greystones and then you look and you see €1 million plus after your name? Like that would just strike me as unbelievably weird and surreal. Good problem, obviously, but just a little bit surreal.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, the money at this point has just become a number. You know, I don't care too much about it because, you know, anything I feel like I need, I can get.
Yeah.
You know, especially then to help me perform. Like I can pay my coaches, I can pay everyone, the caddies, everyone who works for me, my hotel bills, all that stuff, without worrying. And as long as I can do that and be in a good place, then I'm not overly worried about it. You know, it's nice to have the money to buy a nice thing here or there, buy a nice present for your family or something. But I think I got lucky, you know, after the Open, when I turned pro, I got some great sponsors. And right from the get-go, I wasn't worried about money, you know.
Okay.
I knew I had enough to sustain me, and the money's kind of turned more into a points list. You know, I want to finish as high up the points list as I can, but they just rank that on money. So that's kind of the only thought I have about it. I haven't made any capital purchases. I haven't bought a house. I haven't bought a fancy car or anything. So you know, maybe I'll have a look into that over Christmas. But
yeah,
yeah, you know, it is a strange thing, but I almost don't see it as money in my head. You know, it's kind of seen as something else. So I try not to think too much about it.
Yeah, I can imagine it might be slightly overwhelming or head turning in some respects if you did. Well, listen, either way, the point is, like, first European Tour win, it's now turned into a brilliant season with a very few important weeks to come. So look, congratulations, everybody delighted for you, and keep it going, Paul.
Thanks a million. Cheers.
There you go. That was a very happy Paul Dunne speaking to us on Tuesday night. It is now, by the magic of podcasting, Thursday. Fionn is already in Manchester. He's been there some 24 hours now. And Nathan Murphy is here.
How are you?
Very excited to see you.
Shame we couldn't get the three of us together.
I know.
There's a certain magic that's lost when we're just staring each other down.
I said that to Fionn yesterday.
He didn't agree.
Pre-podcast. He said, no, I'll be fine. We'll do it. We'll do it. We'll do it. The listeners still get all of us, but never that same dynamic.
No.
So, Paul Dunne there. Very good.
He mightn't care about the money, but come on. 500 grand.
Imagine seeing £1 million after your year's work. Oof. You know?
We mentioned it last week. He was on 700. So he's on 1.2 million now for the year.
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't think about it.
That's a sure sign that you don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
I look at it as points.
Yes. Yeah. I don't look at my bank balance as points, I can tell you that.
No. Yeah.
So it is now Thursday, and not much has happened in the world, but the first day of the Alfred Dunhill is on. Just we're walking in here. They had it on the TV. Oh, it looks amazing. I mean, if I could do one thing in my life, it might well be play the Alfred Dunhill.
Well, there is, you know, in any profession, you go, oh, I don't care about the fame. I don't care about the fame. Yeah. If there's one reason to get famous,
yeah,
it's to be invited to the Alfred Dunhill.
Saw Shane Lowry tweet the picture of him and AP McCoy and Paul O'Connell yesterday. All smiles, beautiful sky. Oh my God, that's an unbelievable day.
It really is the elite of the elite in terms of
fame. I know.
So you need to be verging on an A-lister.
Yeah.
Or you need to be very rich.
Very rich is good too, yeah. Bill Murray once said to people who wanted to be famous, he said, try being really, really rich first. That pretty much covers it. You know, it's kind of a good piece of advice. So really, really, really rich or really famous. I even saw AP McCoy, a man who's done amazing things in his career, tweeting how he couldn't sleep overnight. This morning, he's like, I couldn't sleep.
And you get to play three courses.
Yeah.
It's not as if it's one round at St. Andrews.
I know.
And it means something.
Just amazing. And the reward for making the cut as an amateur or as one of the amateurs, yeah, you get another round at the old course. It's a real incentive.
I feel sorry for, because so a lot of the rich guys get stuck with, I don't want to say the lesser golfers, but guys who are further down the rankings.
Yeah, the lesser golfers.
I guess, fair enough, yeah. But it means more to those lower-ranked golfers. You'd be more nervous. So if you're going out with, well, the Irish guys always seem to play with the same players, but if you're going out with a guy in the top 20 in the race to Dubai, he's probably relaxed enough, you're relaxed enough. But if you're going out with a guy who's on the bubble.
That's a good point.
Suddenly, there's a lot of pressure on everybody.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never thought about that.
You don't want to be distracting them.
For the likes of the made men, both the celebrities and the best golfers, they are made men. The weekend is a bonus.
Mm.
But yeah, you don't want to be the guy who is dragging your struggling pro down. So anyway, Paul Dunne, very, very impressive there, the way he thought his way through the first tournament win. And it seems that going on the lash with the lads on Sunday night and Monday night and having a good time has actually suited him down to the ground. So he started very well.
He's tied for the lead.
Hey.
He's on 5 under par. He's just actually finished his opening round. He had an eagle at the 9th, he dropped a shot in 17, so he had got to 6 under par. He was 1 clear, but he has dropped back.
Yeah,
and
he's on the old course today.
Is on the old course today, so he's on 5 under par. he's currently 12th in the Race to Dubai standings. So he's tied for the lead with Nicholas Coulthard and JB Gruger.
Nice.
You win this week, you're probably moving into the top 4 or 5 of the Race to Dubai. And like, it's too early, and maybe you're saying going out with the lads on Sunday night is a good thing for Monday. Maybe it's a good thing for Thursday, maybe it's a good thing for Friday.
Yeah.
Maybe on Saturday when you're walking down the back 9 on the old course, maybe that's when it starts to catch up with you and you're a little bit mentally fatigued.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
But even still, he's like, you were talking about in the interview there, he's answered every question. He's almost had the perfect career trajectory that you would want for a young golfer, like a realistic one. Not everybody can be Rory, even though Rory started slowly, not everyone can have Shane Lowry start and win as an amateur. That he contested at an Open, struggled to finish tournaments. So we've seen him so many times over the last 2 years get into contention and be unable to finish it off. Now you really do expect him to step up to the next level again and contend week after week, win 3-4 times a year.
Yeah.
Like, suddenly he has to be looking at Ryder Cup.
Yeah, it's a great point. So he started very well. He was in the Old Course. It's obviously Old Course Carnoustie, which has the teeth, and Kings Barnes, which is a bit more favourable for mere mortals. Rory McIlroy's playing. I'm looking here at
I'm scrolling down.
I saw +2 at one point.
I'm still scrolling down.
Oh dear.
One over. He has just finished.
Where is he playing today, do we know?
It doesn't tell you on the website.
Handy. Keith Pelly really sorted out that website.
No, it doesn't tell you at all.
Okay. Rory is in the back page of all the newspapers here. I have my Irish Daily Mail here, Thursday, October the 5th. Rory, I mean, look at this for a headline. This is why you wouldn't talk to the press, okay? Because, okay, so Rory said what he said about Roy Keane not signing his autograph as a kid. Imagine waking up if you had said this yesterday and the headline, for instance, on the Irish Daily Mail is, Rory, why I'll never forgive Roy Keane. I mean, yes, I said those things, but I never said I'll never forgive him.
Are the exact quotes there?
Yeah, let me come to them. So, Manchester United legend Roy Keane should have been someone... Oh, this is beautiful. Should have been someone Rory McIlroy idolised growing up, given his lifelong support of the club. However, in what ought to be proved to be a cautionary tale for all those supporters who think they're too big to sign autographs, McIlroy made the eye-opening admission yesterday that he's never liked Roy Keane. Okay, after being snubbed by him as a teenager. McIlroy was asked about handing the golf ball to the spectator at the British Masters last week. Oh yeah, the viral video. So the kid was overjoyed. So here he is. This is Rory now. It's lovely when you can do that, but it can work both ways. I remember approaching someone for an autograph when I was that age and they didn't give it to me. And I've never liked them since. Okay, let me turn to page 45 as instructed. I've never liked them since is...
Yeah, actually, when I saw this yesterday, initially I didn't think the comments were quite maybe as harsh as they were.
No, look, I can't argue with the Mail's treatment of the story so far then. So I've never liked them since. And he says, okay, this is now back to the piece. Virtually any other elite sportsman would have stopped at this point. Oh yeah, this is the reporter. And batted back the inevitable request from journalists not to shame the culprit. Not Rory though. God love him, says Derek Lawrenson. No, not Rory. So they pressed Rory. Who was it? It was Roy Keane, who should have been one of my heroes. I went and I asked him for an autograph at the Portmarnock Lynx Hotel when he was with the Ireland squad. And he said, no. It just sort of stuck with me. I'm sure he's all right, but I've never really forgotten that. That's why when kids ask me for an autograph, I always try to do it. There you go.
Now, for any of our American listeners who are wondering who Roy Keane is.
Where do you start?
Firstly, where do you start? There's never been a more divisive figure in Irish life. I was going to say sporting life. I would say Irish life.
Yeah.
Without question, the most famous sports person in Ireland.
Conor McGregor.
In Ireland?
In Ireland.
I think in Ireland. He's more famous than Conor because people over the age of 40, 50 don't really know that much about Conor McGregor. Everyone knows about Roy Keane.
I'll accept that. But our American listeners know about Conor McGregor.
They do.
They're like, who's this Roy Keane? Anyway, he's a footballer. Temperamental. Combustible. A complex character is generally.
Walked out in his country at the World Cup.
Well, that's one way of putting it. That's we're into semantics there. So, yeah, that's... Here's this thing with Rory, you know. Oh, he's great. He never shirks a question. Yeah, okay, grand. If you're a politician or if you're involved in some committee trying to get to the bottom of a complex issue that involves the state or where honesty is that important. Can we come back to real life for a second? Do we all say everything we think? He never shirks a question. You, like, join the real world and start shirking some questions. Why are you on the back page of every paper, both here and in the UK, having a pop at Roy Keane? Really? Like, why involve yourself in that? Why distract yourself? Because if I'm him waking up this morning, unless he's a very, very different person to most people, I'm waking up looking at that going, ugh, what did I gain from that? And okay, you'll have loads of journalists, and I am one, saying, it's great, he never shirks a question.
You said that in a way that you weren't fully convinced.
I from a journalistic point of view...
Like, there is the conflict.
Yeah, no, it's great from a journalistic point of view, okay? But from his point of view, if I'm him, I don't think that's I was going to say appropriate way to behave. Maybe that's too strong. I just don't see why you would go out of your way to involve yourself in a spat publicly with Roy Keane. You gain nothing. And the other, sorry, one last point is, and I've seen people I know tweet him, and I've seen other tweets of people saying, yeah, Rory, I've asked you for an autograph before and didn't get one for whatever reason, or you said no, or you said I'm too busy. So unless you've literally signed every autograph hunter who's come near you 100%, well then, you know, glass houses. Maybe Roy Keane has signed 95% of autograph requests in his life. Maybe he's on a really bad day. You're in that position. Have you signed everything that's come your way? So
one more point just for context about this.
Yeah.
And Roy Keane. Roy always, always bites back. So Roy Keane is the assistant manager of the Irish football team. He did a press conference yesterday. He may not do one again for a few weeks or a couple of months. But you know he's going to be asked about this. And you know Roy, he's not just going to have an answer. He's going to have thought about it.
Yeah.
He's going to have a sarky response. He may laugh it off and that's the end of it. Or he may bite back at McIlroy, which wouldn't really surprise anybody.
No.
I agree with what you're saying, by and large. I think Rory will wake up this morning and look at the papers and go, it's lacking the tone of the way that question was going, which was, it was a bit of a laugh. He was having a bit, you know, he was quite relaxed. It was, you know.
Oh, did you see the press conference? Okay.
I didn't think it was Roy Keane is an asshole.
Isn't that interesting? Because I didn't see the press conference.
But the fact he said his name was probably unnecessary if you didn't want this sort of fallout.
Because I read it, I mean, and look, again, all the tools of the trade. There's a picture of McIlroy looking very serious. I'll never forgive Roy Keane. It seems like he's genuinely kind of a bit annoyed about this still and actually thinks this is really poor form of Roy and he didn't want to be like that. Whereas you're saying it's a bit more relaxed. It's not like he's still hanging on to this in a big way. Though he's hanging on to it a little bit.
Well, he obviously is if he brought it up. And even you're making the point of your mates didn't get autographs, and I get all that. But we don't know the context of Rory's meeting with Roy.
Correct.
Maybe he was in Roy's company. Like, it's Rory McIlroy. Even at a young age, when he goes up to people, people know he's going to be a big deal. Maybe he was in his company and said, can I get an autograph? And Roy was out of line when he said no.
Yeah.
Maybe when Rory's turning down autographs, it's because he's doing something else. Maybe he signed 200 autographs, and that's something that's come up before, I think, at Irish Opens and that he feels he can never do enough. I could stand there for 2 hours signing autographs, and there'll still be the one person who says, well, you didn't do mine.
So is it fair if that golfer if that young kid in 10 years' time does a press conference and says, Rory McIlroy asked him for an autograph, he said no? I don't think it's that fair.
No, well, we don't actually know
context.
But
this business of, you know, he never shirks a question. He never, you know, bats one away. I don't think that's a particularly laudable quality in a lot of ways in real life. If you went around answering every question you're ever asked honestly, or giving your honest opinion on everything.
I don't think he does as much anymore. I think he certainly used when he was a bit younger. I think in the last year, maybe even since the Trump incident, that his press conferences are a bit more straight-laced, and he's definitely on message and convincing the world that his golf game is in a very good position and that side of it. Like, he's always done a little bit of this and thrown a comment out there. But like, the person you're talking about is Roy Keane as well, in that Roy always answers the question the way he thinks it should be answered, doesn't really do the politics of it at all. Yeah, it's like, it's so unnecessary.
That's the word. I'll put my journalistic hat back on now, because I appreciate I'm high and mighty here. From a journalistic point of view, it once again confirms, like, this guy's the most interesting golfer in the world. The ball's on him to call out Roy Keane publicly.
Oh,
I'm in awe of. So, like, it makes me love him still. Like, I love him. Like, there's a certain steel here to call out Roy Keane publicly that I think is great, and it's great for golf. It puts golf on the back pages. So, are you asking me, is the world better at Rory McIlroy in it? Hell yes. It's amazing for us.
I didn't hear of anyone asking Martin O'Neill, the Ireland manager, about it today, which I'm surprised.
Mm.
A fellow Northern Ireland man.
What do you think? So Roy's in the Irish hotel this morning. He's looking at this very same paper.
Well, knowing what we know about Roy, I wouldn't be shocked if Rory got a phone call. I wouldn't be. I think Roy would be within his rights to be pretty pissed off about this. To go, tell me when this was. Yeah. I don't remember it.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not pissed off. Maybe he goes, I was out of line. Shouldn't have happened. I'd say that's doubtful. But maybe you can't, if you picked up the papers and, oh, I've never liked them because of,
yeah,
and nothing incident, as Roy probably sees it.
I would feel, why, say it to me directly first. Why would you have to go to newspapers?
I'm surprised they've never met each other since.
They definitely have. I feel it's, I can't say that, but I feel like it's very likely, no? But maybe Roy isn't that in on the corporate golf circuit, the pro-ams, that kind of stuff. So maybe they haven't.
The last man in the world you're ever going to see.
Well, we invite Roy
Keane. Links.
So there we go. Just one of those weird stories that pops up out of nothing. And ultimately, my bottom line is, I'm really interested, or I'd pay anything to have seen Rory's face this morning when he sees all the papers, as he would do in the hotel restaurant. What does he think to himself? What was I thinking? Like, does he have these moments where he kind of says, it's almost like an out-of-body experience.
Oh,
something comes over me in that moment, you know, like crossing a white line and I'm not myself. I don't know.
He should have known the second you mentioned Roy Keane's name, it's going to be a story and that it's probably going to run. At the same time, having listened to it, I did think it was said in a half-jokey kind of way.
Okay. Well, that's
he really wasn't. I didn't think he was calling out Roy Keane.
Okay.
Fair as enough. Of all the people in all the world I've ever met, the one guy.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Clearly, and unfortunately for Rory, it doesn't read that way.
No.
But that's a fair enough point.
And he hasn't been misquoted there or anything. So.
I dare say Roy won't bother looking for the actual video. I think he's seen what was said. So anyway, that's Rory McIlroy. Fair play to him. So one last thing before we go. We'll mention the competition winner from last week in a second. But very quickly, as a bonus appendage... It's a word, isn't it?
I don't know if it's the right word.
As a bonus addition to the podcast, we have Seamus Power. He was on Off the Ball last night. He kept his card, $287 in the end, after some bloke I'm not too familiar with, a Harmon. His first name's in the interview. Harmon went to pieces.
Not Brian.
No, not Brian.
Or Butch.
No, not Butch. Missed a 3-footer and 17.
Oof.
That's the difference from Power being on the PGA
Tour. He's the guy we need to get on.
Yeah. Safeway Open is on this week. New season starts on the PGA Tour in California. So Seamus Power on Off the Ball last night. A very, very relieved man. He was in California because he's already starting the new season now on the PGA Tour.
I am, yeah. How's it going?
Good. How's the weather?
It's beautiful, actually. I'm actually had to get some shade. It was a bit too sunny.
Good. Well, we're dark, miserable, cold. So the reason you're in California is you got some golf to play. PGA Tour season.
I do.
It starts, it's a wraparound season these days. So for non-golf fans, they'll be surprised to learn that even though the FedEx is just over, the new golf season starts tomorrow. And you're part of it after coming through, I guess, something akin to Q School, the web.com championship, the tour championship at the weekend, by the skin of your teeth. $287 is next to nothing across a PGA Tour season.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably the most nervous I was for a couple of days on the golf course, because it was just, when I finished in particular, it was just out of my control. There was another couple of guys left, and fortunately, a couple of guys missed putts that they needed to make. But yeah, I mean, I was lucky, and as you said, you get started straight away, so there's no time to really enjoy it or kind of look back on anything. So, you know, I said get started tomorrow morning, and as played my practice round yesterday and today and getting ready for tomorrow.
Yeah. So this was at the tournament at the weekend where you finished in 48th place, which meant overall you were in the top 25. You were 25th of 25, which means you get your card for next year. And you finished really well. You'd run a 4 birdies and 6 holes to get back up to 25th overall and therefore be able to play next year. And then you were sat watching an American player, Matt Harmon, who
I was.
Yeah, and Harmon, his putting pretty much blew up when it mattered most. Like Matt Harmon misses, the guy, I mean, you're sitting there watching him, he misses a putt from 3 feet on 17 and then he 3-putts the last for bogey. So you're sitting there and it must be like, I mean, I guess you're slightly sad for someone else, but incredible for you. And it's a sign of the pressure when a guy's missing a 3-footer. We've heard horror stories about Q School. I can't imagine what it's like.
It's just, it's not easy going, that's for sure, because, you know, everyone knows what to do. You play your best golf when your mind is thinking of what you're doing right now and kind of on the moment. But in a situation like that, it's much harder to do than say, you know, because you're aware of the implications of if you make, if you miss. I mean, your mind is already into playing the PGA Tour, probably. I'm sure his mind was already on that. And he was thinking about the, probably this week in California, and, you know, telling family and friends he's on the PGA Tour, and, you know, and that's all it takes, and then all of a sudden you miss a putt, and I mean, all of a sudden you want to go back 20 minutes and have it, do it over again. But I mean, again, I was fortunate to be on the correct side of it, which was nice. But yeah, it was horrible watching. I mean, him and then there was another guy, Roberto Castro, who had a 40 or 50 footer on the last green for eagle, which if he made that, he would have passed me. And, you know, 10 feet from the hole, I jumped out of my chair because it looked like it couldn't miss. And, you know, it just runs along the top edge of the hole and missed them. You know, that's what I knew for sure. And yeah, that my drive back, my 600 feet, felt a lot easier after that. That's for sure.
Oh, I can imagine. So you were sitting there watching Castro and Harmon finish out. You were able to watch on the TV.
I was. I didn't see Harmon that putt on 17, but I was finishing on 9 just before he was on 18.
Yeah.
And I knew he was close to me, and he didn't hit a very good pitch shot. He hit it like 45 feet, and at that point I knew he needed to make that. So I figured he was okay, but it was only afterwards I found out he'd missed the 3-footer. So then it was down to the Castro guy, who also 3-putted 17 and then nearly made that putt on 18. So, you know, I needed a couple of good breaks, but I was very, very pleased that it went my way.
I'm not exaggerating to say, like, this is a monumental difference in your life. I mean, to be on the PGA Tour versus one of the lower tours, web.com tour, it's a different universe in every way, and not least financially. How do you keep those thoughts at bay when you're finishing up last weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I said it's not easy. The fortunate thing for me was because I finished just outside the 125 this year, I would have gotten some starts anyway. Not nearly the amount as I'll get now, but I would have certainly gotten a few.
Yeah.
Just maybe made it a little easier for me. But yeah, you said, I mean, the difference is just huge. I mean, you go from playing arguably the top tour in the world, playing against all the top players for a lot more money and a lot more people watching to playing a tour that really not too many people even care about or know what's going on. It's just all about trying to get off it and get to the PGA Tour. So, yeah, I mean, it was huge. And I mean, you can see it was like on my shoulders and everything as soon as that Castro guy missed. And, you know, I knew for the next year how much of a difference that makes. And, you know, for me, it gives me another opportunity, the PGA Tour this year. You know, my rookie year didn't quite go as well as I would have liked, but, you know, I get to have another shot at it now, so we'll see how it goes.
That rookie year will really stand to you, though. So much of the rookie year is just finding your bearings, getting to know the courses, dealing with the crowds, the cameras, all of that kind of stuff. So now you have that under your belt. And it's probably a bad analogy to reach for, but, you know, when somebody's almost like very sick and then they get better again, they almost have a new verve for life. I would presume you're itching to get out there and play aggressively now in the PGA Tour.
Yeah, absolutely. I think such a relief, like, for that aspect. So, I mean, you feel like you're almost like you got like second wind going into this week. Mm. And then, as you said, like, I know the golf courses, know much more about everything that's going on. Just knowing, just all the basic things, knowing like where are good places to eat, stay. Just you're not kind of walking around like a headless chicken like you would be at certain times last year when you're just trying to find things. You're trying to find the locker room. You're trying to find everything.
Yeah, it's amazing how much that small stuff, you're not the first golfer to mention all that, like the hotels, where to eat, the locker room. It seems to make such a massive difference to just, I guess you're less stressed is your kind of the big thing?
Yeah, I think you're less stressed and your mind just doesn't have to work as much, so you're almost like resting without realizing. I think just when you're walking around, you're trying to figure out what is that, where is that, where am I going, what does this hole do? And I mean, there's just a lot more going on mentally, and you know, I mean, also, the biggest thing will be the courses. You know, like you play a practice on Tuesday. A course changes a lot between Tuesday and then the weekend. You know, they start to firm it out. The greens will be faster, firmer. And then, like, the pins will be in spots that you obviously haven't seen before. You can guess, but, you know, now I'm dealing with situations where I don't, like, a lot of the guessing is taken out. I know I have a fair idea where the pins are going to be. I know what the kind of course is going to give me over the weekend, what I can and can't do. So it makes it a lot easier.
Was last year a lonely year?
No, not at all. Jeez, I had a great time. I mean, obviously there's some aspects of it. You obviously travel and you're away from family and friends a lot. But, I mean, the PGA Tour, they make it as comfortable and as enjoyable as they possibly can. I mean, everything from the food is top-notch every week. I mean, you walk in and there's a big, huge spread. There's, like, smoothie bars and there's omelet stations, all this kind of thing for food. And you're staying in nice places and you're traveling. And I mean, it's like... it's obviously, you're obviously away and stuff, but like, I mean, you, there's a lot of other perks, you know. It's like any job, you know, there's so many positives and negatives, and obviously the being away from a lot of people is a lot of negatives, but you certainly have a lot of positives to you know, outweigh most of those negatives.
The interesting thing now is that because the Tour Championship, the saving of your card was just last weekend, and now the new season starts tomorrow. It's not like you've some kind of off season to go off and work on your game or really change your approach. So you're kind of going back out on tour with effectively the same game.
Yeah, very much. Like it is. It's a tricky system now because I played eight tournaments in 9 weeks to finish the PGA Tour season, and then you play four tournaments in 5 weeks right after in the playoffs. And then you go straight into the new season. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, you don't have a chance to reevaluate and go, I'm going to change my approach. I mean, you certainly have that opportunity after the fall series events. But, I mean, right now you just have to play with your hand. You got to find some confidence no matter where you get that. And I mean, you just got to go and try and make some putts.
And how is your game? Is there something that you're eyeing up improving when the fall season stops and you get a little bit of a break?
Yeah, I mean, I've been pretty pleased. I mean, I haven't missed a cut since, I think, like early June or early or mid-June. So, I mean, I've got a nice little string of no missed cuts. So that's the long game has come together. And then it's just a matter of, you know, stringing together some good rounds. You know, I've had like one or two decent rounds or maybe even three, but haven't quite put all four. So that's going to be the focus. And, I mean, the best way to do that is just to improve your, like, you know, you get your wedges a little closer to the hole. It'll help some par fives, help save some shots. And then, I mean, so much of golf comes down to, you know, how many putts you're going to be able to make in key situations.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a lot of that. You know, I know, like, physically a lot of the game is there, so it's just trying to tighten up some stuff mentally that I learned from my first season and, you know, try to put it into play.
Yeah, you mentioned they're playing eight events in 9 weeks, followed by another four in five. Anyone who's played a round of golf knows you're, like, I mean, we're not as finely tuned, but you're pretty shattered at the end of a day. Even just the walking around is can take a toll. So 4 or 5 days a week, 8 out of 9 weeks. Are you absolutely in bits at the end of that? Or how does the body feel at the end of that?
The body is not too bad, but it's mentally more than anything. I think because, you know, the summer in America is very, very hot as well. So you're playing in, I mean, we're playing at, like, you know, 30, high 30s, and it's humid. And you know, so that takes its toll physically as well. But and a lot of it's just mental. I mean, because you're bouncing around, you're you have to travel across the country, you're going to a new place, and you're trying to learn a new course, and then you're trying to play four competitive rounds of golf in a pressure situation where you know the top 125 is going to keep your card, and you have to try to get in there. So I think mentally it probably weighs on you more than physically. But I mean, certainly you have to take care of yourself physically. You have to make sure you're eating right. You have to make sure you're still getting to the gym, even some days where maybe you're a little tired and you're not feeling it. You got to keep your body in a situation where it's working properly and on the 18th hole on Sunday, you're still swinging as well as you were Thursday morning. So you have to keep doing the things that you know that help you, and you know, again, over the course of the season, you hope that they pay off.
Yeah. We mentioned poor Harman at the top, the guy who missed the 3-footer. What people know as Q School at the weekend, Matt Harmon. Did you chat to him afterwards, or is it just like, oh, he doesn't really need to hear from me?
I didn't. And to be honest, when I finished, I kind of got out there pretty fast,
right?
Because like the golf channel were looking to talk to me, but I was just like, because it was so unknown at the time, I was like, I don't really know what I'd be able to say right now, because, I mean, you really do feel a lot of pressure. Your next year of your job is so dependent on like the next 5 minutes. It was a strange feeling.
Yeah.
So I kind of left, and to be honest, I don't know what you could say. You know, like, I've been in tough situations, and sometimes you just want to be left alone. I know my caddy did text him yesterday just to tell him, you know, keep your chin up, and you know, your time will come. But I'm sure it's a very tough situation for him, and you know, to be that close and just not to perform kind of when you feel like you needed it.
It's
obviously going to be tough. But.
Yeah, I can imagine how he's feeling. It's like in sport at the top level, it's all about small margins. Golf is just takes things to another extreme, though. I mean, like it would just drive me absolutely insane. Like, I don't know how someone like Matt Harmon is going to live with that three-footer for the next couple of weeks. Like, you must look at putts that miss by millimetres or bad bounces, and you kind of think, my entire livelihood is based on this. Like, you can see why guys in their late 40s, the nerves are frayed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you do... And the thing with golf, it's just, it's not... You know, everything is small margins. I mean, the cup is only whatever, four and whatever. And it's just, I mean, if you're... When you start breaking it down, it is crazy. Your cup is maybe one or 2 degrees open, and that could be the difference between, you know, for someone like Matt Harmon making his card, losing his card. Or yeah, but you don't think too much about it at the time. In the big picture, I guess it is crazy, but at the time, you're just thinking, you know, I've knocked in these putts thousands of times. I've hit this shot thousands of times, and you just have to try to stick to that stuff. I mean, I don't care who you are, the pressure is always going to be there, nerves are going to be there. It's just the difference is like how you perform when those nerves are there. And, you know, some of that comes with experience. Some people are born with it probably better than others. But some of it just comes with experience and being in that position a few times and, you know, like learning sometimes the hard way to, you know, watch what you did wrong. Sometimes, like sometimes people speed up a little bit too much. Sometimes people slow down, or sometimes you think too much or think too little. And, you know, so when you're in that situation, you obviously have to try to learn. And, you know, the next time you're there, you're hoping you're going to perform better and, you know, make it count.
Listen, we'll let you go. So good luck tomorrow and this week. And hopefully you get off to a flyer of a start and this season goes better than the last. It's an amazing thing to be on the PGA Tour. I mean, you're basically in the top 0.00001% of golfers in the world. So it's we know how difficult it is out there. So well done, and the very best of luck over the next few months.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
There you are. What a podcast. Seamus Power and Paul Dunne.
Wow, all the big guns.
All the big guns. So before we go, we had a competition last week.
Yes, because, Joe, as you know, celebrating 25 years in business, Charles Lang Golf Club is giving lucky listeners a chance to win a four ball. This is what we did last week. I'm just reading it all again.
Yeah.
In the beautiful surrounds of Greystones, County Wicklow.
Home to Paul Dunne.
Home to Paul Dunne.
Millionaire Paul Dunne.
Enjoy a challenging, well, lots of points.
Yeah.
He's got 1,000,000 points. Yeah. Does that translate to money? Yes, it does, Paul. Yes, it does.
Almost unit for unit directly.
Enjoy a challenging test of golf on a 6,000-plus-metre parkland course that scenically skirts the Irish Sea. It makes for a great golfing experience. So we were giving away four balls.
That's 16,
they were very generous.
16 rounds
of
golf.
16, yes, but well, not for the one person.
No, I know. But from a Charles Land golf point of view.
Yes, good multiplication there. The winners are Conor McCreedy.
Way.
Wally Cummins.
Wally Cummins. He's a familiar tweeter. Yeah, go on.
Mark Carroll.
Not as familiar with Mark.
Colm Howley.
No, Wally Cummins is the only one I know.
We should have spoken about this beforehand and picked out some more...
Frequent. No. I think for the integrity of the competition, it has to be random.
Also, they are now going to be friends of the pod forever because they get to go to Charles Lang Golf Club in scenic Greystones, County Wicklow.
And they would have had to listen to enter last week.
Well, clearly, so they like it.
They are all friends of the pod. Well done. So will we be in touch or will the golf course?
Someone will be in touch.
Somebody will be in touch.
We've not us.
So we're pretty much done. I feel in some ways you, me and Fiona have been together and in other ways we haven't.
Well, I don't feel like I've been with Fiona at all.
No.
We bonded through you.
Yes.
Okay. We all know which role you filled in
this. Stuff. Okay, so that's another podcast done. So next week we'll reflect on the Alfred Dunhill. We'll almost certainly have a Roy Keane response to Rory McIlroy to talk about. And the Safeway Open, the PGA Tour starts.
I'm excited.
All that is on the way next week. We'll see you then. Good luck. Right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Oh. Little JD starter kid right here.